All right. As we talked over the break, this neighborhood play, just to talk about a little bit more, how did it come into existence, and really, what was it there for, and maybe we don't need it anymore?
Well, Marty, you know, I don't know for sure, but, you know, having played and played and talking to other shortstops like Sean Dunston we have here who played years ago, you know, my belief is the neighborhood play came about not because the umpires were letting you not touch the base. It came about because when a guy would turn a double play and he wouldn't be on the base, the umpires couldn't see it. They couldn't see for sure. It happened so quick. They can't always tell if the guy's foot on the base and he's catching the ball. So I know myself, and I know other shortstops that played, if you did cheat and come off the base and you weren't there, the umpire would say, hey, you better touch, you better give me a better tag there. So, you know, maybe they're seeing that they weren't sure if he was on or not, but they wasn't definitive enough to call him safe. They say, you better give me a better tag. And I've seen, and I've been involved with it, when you weren't on the base, you cheated too much, and the umpire called you safe, saying you're off the base. Mm-hmm. So I think now all of a sudden, it wasn't a rule back then. It was just something that happened because you didn't have replay. Now that we have replay, I don't see any reason why you can't hold the players accountable to touching the base.
Yeah, and protect yourself. If the runner's bearing in on you, like you say, get off the bag, and you don't turn two, you turn one, and or else learn how to jump.
That's the point, you know. I think why the neighborhood play came into existence is they were talking about safeties of the catchers, right, and they wanted to have safety of the middle infielder at the same time. And that may very well be it. But I don't think the neighborhood play was in existence years ago because they were just letting them do it. I just think it was a difficult call for the umpire.
Yeah, well, good insight. No, that's, I bet you're right about that. All right, the Pirates are coming in. They shift all the time. I don't know if they shift every pitch or not, but Clint Hurdle has bought into it. His team is better. They had Russell Martin with the pitch framing thing. He was the best around doing that. What do you think of pitch framing? What about that? Start with that.
Well, that's an interesting statistic. I really don't know much about it as far as, you know, how they come about grading these guys on framing the pitch. I'd have to hear more detail. It's a little bit abstract to me. It's a very difficult thing to quantify because, you know, you could do a great job at receiving the ball and bringing it back, but if the umpire doesn't call it a strike, you know, there's different umpires, where your number's going to be. So, again, it goes back to myself, someone that's been on the field his whole life, watching guys receive the ball. We tend to, you know, look at, you know, how does a guy receive the ball? Has he got good hands? Is he receive it good? Not the statistical part of it, but what we see with our eyes on the ability of the player.
And I think that you can steal strikes that way if you do receive the ball well.
Absolutely.
Billy Hayes always told me that. Billy Hayes almost got hit again last night. You know something, he's got his shin guard on because he's wearing a lot of equipment down there from the runners. I think he's going to have like a chest protector down there.
Well, you know what? If he gets hit, it's not going to hurt him. And I'm telling you right now, he's not going to rub it. So he did have that ankle guard on. I think he threw that leg out to try to let it ricochet off that ankle guard and maybe into the stands for a little kid that's sitting there. I mean, he has that type of ability.
Yeah, really. I mean, Blanco almost nailed him twice. And then the bullpen got on him. Then all of a sudden he turned around and he was talking to the bullpen about it. So he's an adventure. It's interesting.
Well, you know, that's the overlooked part of it. You know, I had the opportunity to coach third in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear that day was not only screwing up a sign, but getting hit with a ball. And you're in harm's way out there. You know, when you have a runner at first and second, you're supposed to be watching the runner to make sure they don't do a back pick. You know, the catcher doesn't come up throwing. You watch the runner. You're really not seeing the swing the way you want to see it because you want to watch the runner. You got to glance and take a look because if he hits a shot at you, you know, you're in a bad spot. So it is dangerous out there.
You ever get hit? You've coached
a
lot.
Yeah. I've been hit. Absolutely. Absolutely. Some balls, you know, they start hooking, and no matter which way you try to go, they're coming at you. And I think most everybody that's been out there has probably been hit at one time or another.
Look at the umpire. He got hit. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in Milwaukee.
Yeah. And he got like a laser shot, and the guy just, I don't know what happened. He didn't get out of the way.
Yeah, it's difficult. And he's closer. You know, even when the infield's in, you're playing usually on the grass. The umpire's on the grass a few steps.
Yeah.
So some of these big hitters, I do know this, the older we get, those reaction times slows down quite a bit. And I don't like standing out on the infield right now because them balls come hard. So as an umpire, it's a dangerous position to be in. I'm surprised they don't make those guys wear helmets.
All right, Eddie Montague, where are you? Helmets for the umpire. That's good. All right, well, that would be a good one. You'll be popular with that.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Bring that up. All right, but the Pirates are coming in. They shift all the time. I don't know if they shift per pitch, but they do seem to shift a lot. What do you expect here, and how do you react to it?
Well, they have shifted in the past as much as any team in the league that we've seen. We're not in their division to see, you know, how far they take it, but I'm sure they'll be shifting on a couple of our guys out there. And it'll be interesting to see if they shift in counts. I think that's the next step in this whole thing. I mean, we do a little bit of it. We're not sure if it's a shift guy or not. So we'll play. You know, maybe we're playing, you know, Crawford's playing dead pull. And then when the count gets 2-0 or 3-1, he'll actually go on the other side and you'll take the third baseman. He'll go to short, which makes a lot of sense because when a hitter's in a hitting count, he doesn't want to slap a hit the other day. He's the other way. He's trying to drive the ball out of the park. So I think more teams will probably do that, and that maybe the Pirates will do it. We'll wait and see.
How do you get the attention of Crawford to do that? Does he know to do that, or does he look in every play to you?
He doesn't look in every play, but we go over the lineup every day. Not that we're having a conversation every day. Usually the first day of the series, we'll have an in-depth conversation, and I'll let them know about the shift guys, and I'll print something out every day and put it in their chair. So if, you know, the Bumgarner's positioning today is different than Lincecum yesterday, totally different where the guys may hit the ball. So I'll put a sheet in his chair, and they'll look at it. All the infielders will look at it, and sometimes we'll talk, sometimes we won't. If there's a decision like that to be made, he'll look in. And to Cross credit, you know, I rely on him a lot. You know, the question was brought up in the shift, why not put Duffy at second, leave Craw at short? Right. Well, one thing Craw does out there is he reads a swing, and I rely on his knowledge of the moment on what's happening, not to spray charts what we saw yesterday, what he's seeing in a swing. So, for instance, you know, he has the ability to see the swing. He may start dead pull, but if he thinks he should go on a second base side, I say, hey, have at it. You know, he's making that call. So it's just not me putting him in one spot and you're staying there. Mm-hmm. We get him where we think it's going to start, and then we let the players use his instinct and make a decision from there. And Craw's very good at it, and that's one reason we have him there.
Boy, they start thinking, and that's the interesting part of it. Your job, it's amazing to me, and we had a fellow on yesterday, Travis Sawchik, who did the book on baseball data and how the Pirates sort of pioneered more of this stuff. And how much information can you get? My goodness, it's only one baseball game, and all the reams of material and stats and this and that. And all right, Ron, it's 10 in the morning. You're playing at 7 at night. We now give you 300 pages of what's going to happen. How do you sift through this stuff and what's what? Because it could be endless.
Well, it could. And, you know, I think Phil Jackson said it, the great basketball coach with the Bulls, you know, if I had to prepare more than an hour or two for a basketball game at night, I'm doing something wrong. I mean, it is endless. There's so much information that you can dissect and take. So, you know, everybody probably takes what they feel is most important. I do believe in this day and age there's so much more information that you have to look at other things. You know, you have to take a look at what's available to you if you really want to have a complete picture. I also think that a lot of the front offices now are not only giving you the information, but they're helping in deciphering the information. And I'm not sure if the Pirates do it. I think they may have a defensive guy upstairs who's setting the defenses for them. So now the coach on the field that may move them, he can look at other things. And it's coming from up above where we want him because he sat up there for 3 or 4 hours, and that was his one job, to look at all the swings and dissect how we're going to pitch him and where we're going to play him. So I think people today are taking it to a different level, but you have to, you can't do it all. You have to pick and choose what's important to you, and most guys do by their experience in the game and what information they want to have.
Yeah, hybrid. It's a hybrid. You got to use it, but there's a limit to what you can do. This fellow said on the show yesterday, I said, what's next? He said, next will be the stats of sabermetricians will try to figure out how much a player can play without getting injured. In other words, pitch count, innings, games in a row, stuff like that. That's what he said
yeah.
was next.
Well, that's probably a very important piece of the puzzle. And I think they're already doing it. I know our training staff is already doing it. And that's the number one thing, keeping the guys on the field and keeping them healthy. Whether that sabermetric community gets involved with that or not, we'll have to wait and see. But it's like anything else. Any information that you get, you got to take it with a grain of salt, and you got to pick and choose just how valid it is, and where does it fall in the scale of what's most important. And you know, we look at a lot of information, and a lot of times, you know, the information I look at, I'm using 1% of it when the game starts because you're going on your instinct and what the guy's doing in the moment, and a lot of times it's different than what you've seen in the past.
Boy, interesting. Well, great stuff. Ron Wotus with us, of course, Sunday morning. The professor, we have the philosopher, you know, Javier Lopez did a nice job with that yesterday.
I missed it. I'll have to catch the replay on that. I'd like to hear that.
I'll send it to you. We'll email it so you can hear it. All right, another fellow, we had an interesting show yesterday. Another fellow came on, two of them. And, you know, baseball's been an interactive game since it started. You did it as a kid. We sat in the stands. We do it today. We say, Boach, get this guy out of here. This is the wrong batting order. Send him, don't send him, and all this kind of stuff. So they've created a website in conjunction with an independent team in the Frontier League. I think it's the Lake Erie Crushers, where certain questions will be posed to the audience. Who should hit first, second, third? Should we bunt more? Should we do the squeeze play more? Who's our relief pitcher? Who's the closer? And inevitably, should the manager be fired? And you subscribe to the website, and on a weekly basis, you answer these questions, and these answers then are put into play with the team. How would you like that?
Well, I wouldn't want to be the manager. I tell you that right now. The job's difficult enough than when you have everybody's opinion, your fans' opinion. I mean, look, the poor manager over there, he has his coaches, and I'm sure he has his superiors giving him, you know, instruction on who they believe in, who should play, et cetera, et cetera. Now you're going to open it up to the fan base. You might have, you know, you might have 50 different opinions. Instead of having three different opinions, you might have 50. So it's probably fun for the fans. You know, I'm sure they're going to have fun with it on talk radio and in discussions, but I sure wouldn't want to be that man.
Well, look, you know, 20 years from now, we'll do the show on this one of these Sundays. What do we see in baseball 20 years now? And the technology is amazing. And these kinds of things, Pete, this is where Rob Manfred's going. You know, this younger generation that he likes to call the internet generation. They like this stuff. They like the apps. They like doing all this stuff. And who knows where this thing's going. So get ready.
Okay, I'll get ready. You're right. You're right. It is going there. I mean, it's changed quite a bit already, the things they talk about on TV. I mean, you watch, you know, MLB Channel and Brian Kenny and the Sabermetrics and how much they put into all the new statistics and things. There's a lot of conversation about it.
Stuff.
I'm sure it's bringing out a lot of interest in a whole new fan base that we didn't have before.
Exactly. And baseball's a talking sport. I've said it for many years. Well, a little history lesson here for you. They did this in the early 1950s, I think 52. Bill Veeck was the owner of the St. Louis Browns, and that was the year that they used the height-challenged person, shall we say, as a pinch hitter, Eddie Goodell.
Right.
And they walked him. And then, of course, the next day he was banned from baseball. But another thing Bill Veeck did was he had grandstand manager's night. And he had his manager sitting in a rocking chair. By third base, and every time a situation came up, a bunt, squeeze play, take the pitcher out, the patrons sitting behind third base, the dugout, had signs, yes, no, and that kind of stuff, and he had to listen, and he won the game. And they won the game. The St. Louis Browns won the game. So this has been going on, for as long as baseball has been in existence. It's been an interactive game. We just didn't know it, how it could be used in today's world.
Now we hear about it. Well, I hope those guys back then weren't drinking. Did they serve an alcohol to those guys back there that were making
St.
the
Louis,
decisions?
St. Louis, Beer City.
Yeah, you know, well, maybe that's the key.
It's a beer.
Maybe more alcohol would be the way to go.
All right, Bobby Knight said it. If you listen to the fans, you'll sit with the fans. And that was one of the better quotes I heard. Team's doing pretty well. Must be pretty happy with what's going on. Mike, I said, 8 shutouts in a month, and you're getting the pitching, and you're playing good baseball. And Duffy looks like he's handling third pretty well.
Yeah, no, you're right. To be where we're at after the start, you know, we were against the eight ball there. I mean, we were, what, six, seven games under 500.
4-10, and you lost 8 in a row.
I lost 8 in a row, and to come back to where we're very happy with it. And we're playing the baseball we want to play. As you said, the pitching's been tremendous. And when you pitch and you score runs, you score one more than the other guy, you win games. But, you know, it's been the pitching. We played solid defense, and we're scoring runs. So we've had a lot of things working together. You know, it's difficult to maintain that through the course of the year. I mean, last night was, you know, it was on the flip side of that. So we want to keep moving forward, doing what we're doing. We're playing good baseball.
Yeah, you're not going to play 700 ball. So we know that. There are going to be games like last night. But one last thought for you. Duffy at third, and I talk to him. I say, you're playing the hot corner. Think of Mike Schmidt, Eddie Matthews, you know, these third basemen. They would use their chest, Brooks Robinson. He's starting to use his chest at third base, and he did it last night.
Yes, he did. Yeah, with Chris Johnson. It's funny, right before that inning, because we go over the defense, he says, should I play Johnson shade pull? You know, and I said, yeah, he's a pull hitter. He's, you know, there's a good chance he's going to hit one down that line. So sure enough, he goes over there, and he took that bullet right off his chest. And I think if he was anywhere else, he wouldn't have had a chance. So I think he used his chest there more, not by design, but obviously it was a bullet that was an in-between hop. But to your point, that's what you're supposed to do. You're not going to get your glove on every ball at third base, because some balls are smashed, and if you can't pick it, you're taught you can block it, pick it up, and throw him out. So it was a great play on his part. And as you said, I think he's doing a very commendable job over there. He's playing well. He's not hurting us at all down there. And it's new position. Look, he played it in college, and that's not as easy as people think. Sure, he's an infielder, but the ball comes off the bat different. You know, those choppers are a little different. There's bunt plays. There's reads. There's a lot of things for him to learn over there, and he's handling extremely well.
Yeah, he got caught on a little footwork, I think, in Milwaukee on one. He got an in-between hop and kind of got cha-cha'd on it a little bit.
Those are the tough balls, and you know, that's where, you know, you can try to hit ground balls all you want, but that's where the game experience of playing the position and getting those reads at game speed really make a difference for a player. And look, he's an intelligent kid, hard worker, and a very good athlete, so he'll adjust just fine over there.
Yeah, he's got 22 RBIs. Come on, are you kidding me?
I know. We wouldn't be where we're at without him. He's done a great job. I mean, he started on the bench, and now he's a starting third baseman. Yeah, nice. So good for him.
All right, well, have a good day today. Thanks for coming in. And the professor has spoken, and we'll see you, I guess, in a couple of weeks. Let's see, Philadelphia, the Mets. I guess you're back Arizona. I think we'll see you that weekend.
Okay, Marty, right. Sounds good. Right, it's good
thanks.
Seeing you.
All right, that is the bench coach of the Giants, Ron Wotus. More coming up on The Sports Leader.